Welcome to Conversations, COVID-19, the year that was. I am Candace Hoffman, and in this podcast, we're going to take a look back over the past year of the COVID-19 pandemic. We will also be talking with Dr. Susan Bailey, pediatric allergist and immunologist, and president of the American Medical Association, to discuss her views on the impact of the virus. When a new virus showed up in Wuhan, China in December 2019, no one knew that our lives would dramatically change. By January 2020, COVID-19 had spread beyond China's borders to Japan, South Korea, and Thailand, and the United States reported its first case in Washington State. By the beginning of March, there were 60 cases in the United States and 6 people had died. On March 11, 2020, the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a pandemic when there were 118,000 confirmed cases in 114 countries, including the United States, and 4,291 people were dead. By March 26, the U.S. led the world, not in successfully combating the virus, but as the country hardest hit by it, with more than 81,000 confirmed cases and more than 1,000 dead. New York City became overwhelmed by the virus and, like many other cities around the world, shuttered its businesses, schools, and universities. Broadway went dark and sports arenas stood empty. This scenario was repeated across the nation as measures were taken to try to control the virus's spread. Social distancing, mask wearing, and hand washing became the public health mantra. By the end of April, there were 60,966 dead in the United States and more than 1 million cases. And the numbers kept ramping up. By the end of October, the U.S. recorded more than 9 million cases of COVID-19. Pharmaceutical companies began the quest for the Holy Grail, a vaccine that could turn the tide and flatten the curve. In December, the FDA issued emergency use authorizations for 2 vaccines, one from Pfizer-BioNTech and one from Moderna. The U.S. entered the new year with more than 20 million cases. The vaccines started rolling out, but miracles do not happen quickly. On February 15th, the U.S. passed 400,000 deaths, and a week later hit a grim milestone. 500,000 people were dead. Let's join Peggy Peck, editor-in-chief of Breaking Med, and our conversation with Dr. Bailey.
A year into the pandemic, your thoughts about American medicine, what the past year has done or what impact it has?
Aside from the obvious, medical impact and devastation that we've seen from the pandemic, I believe it has exposed a number of cracks in our system and also given us some opportunities and a roadmap for improvement. I think one of the first ones that comes to mind is, of course, the explosive growth in telemedicine. I know my own practice went from 0 to 100% telemedicine in a matter of hours last year. And there's no question that it has really, the industry of telemedicine matured about 10 years in about 10 weeks. I think it has shown the importance of telemedicine and the delivery of care, and the genie is out of the bottle per se. So we desperately need to make the payment and regulatory changes that happened, make those permanent and so that we can continue to deliver this care, which doctors like and patients like. There is a bill now in Congress to make some of these changes permanent. First of all, it makes no sense to me to base telemedicine availability on where the patient happens to be, whether they're in an underserved area or in a federal qualified health center. Even a patient's home is one of the best places to deliver telemedicine because it spares them the hassle as well as the potential dangers of traveling, and especially for those that are mobility impaired. Also, the payment. Many physicians did not use telemedicine regularly because it was not adequately reimbursed, and we need to make those changes permanent, and we need for private insurance to cover medicine, as well as governmental programs like Medicare and Medicaid cover telemedicine.
While telehealth services may be a bright spot that emerged during the last year, getting a grip on the virus was not. It was evident that in order to mitigate the virus, accurate tests for the virus were needed, and wide availability of those tests was a must. Contact tracing was also needed to determine how it was spreading. But in this, the U.S. faltered.
What went wrong here?
Well, I think it's clear that we got behind in testing very early on in the pandemic when the CDC designed tests didn't really operate the way they were designed to operate. And I think our potential for a niche contact testing, contact tracing, isolation strategy got away from us very, very early. But I believe that the testing issues that we have were just a symptom of the overall fragility of our public health system, you know, writ large. Really, the decrease in financing of our public health system started a decade ago and has been in slow decline ever since. It has always been a system that got great support during and after pandemics, but then we would kind of forget about it afterwards. We need to have an ongoing federal pandemic disaster response agency, office, whatever you want to call it.
The pandemic tested the very structure of the U.S. health system and found it lacking. Hospitals were overwhelmed. Testing became available, but there didn't seem to be a national strategy to ensure adequate testing and contact tracing. Personal protective equipment was in short supply.
One of the glaring deficiencies at the beginning of the pandemic was the availability of PPE. I know my own small allergy practice had a box of 10 N95 masks that were left over from the H1N1 pandemic 10 years prior. We just happened to have 10 people in our office. Each person got one, was told to take very good care of it until we could get some more. And it was weeks before we were able to get more because as a private practice, not affiliated with a hospital system or large, you know, academic health center, we had no supply chain. And so I think that the need for PPE stockpiles to be maintained, the need for, you know, a federal coordination of the production, distribution, availability of PPE has been shown to be incredibly necessary. We need to level the playing field for the acquisition of PPE because a small practice like mine cannot compete with a large health system when it comes to ordering PPE. You know, I would search online for PPE, say N95 masks, and the minimum order was 10,000. So that situation has to be taken care of for the future. Every physician, every healthcare system needs to have a stockpile of PPE, and we need to make sure that the market is fair.
Along with missteps and shortages, the pandemic had a PR problem. Some people, for whatever reason, did not believe the science. 2020 was an election year and a year of social strife. People gathered at political rallies and protests, and they were often maskless. These became known as super spreader events, and some people called the pandemic a hoax. Mask wearing or not wearing became a political statement. Dr. Bailey weighs in on this issue that has undermined the public health messages during the pandemic.
Unfortunately, our society has been trending towards an anti-science, anti-intellectual bent for many years. And I have said before, and I still believe, that one of the most unfortunate aspects of the pandemic was the fact that it happened during an election year, which made it ripe for politicization. I think it has been one of the great tragedies that mask wearing has become politicized, as has opening up schools, as has even to some extent vaccines. And we need to continue to send the message that we need to rely on trusted public health authorities for public health messages, you know, not politicians, whichever side of the aisle they may be on. The AMA is very proud to be working with the Ad Council and the COVID Collaborative in an unprecedented public education project about vaccines and vaccine confidence. And the Ad Council realized that it takes You have to be consistent in your messaging. You have to be honest in your messaging, but it can come from many different messengers in many different ways. And this consistency and honesty of messaging is what really needs to be done. And it is what has been sorely lacking all along.
Another issue laid bare by the pandemic in the United States is health disparities. Dr. Bailey discussed the causes and need for solutions to ensure all Americans get adequate care.
We have had healthcare disparities for as long as we've had healthcare, I believe. And the pandemic certainly exposed those disparities very, very starkly. You know, and we could talk about, you know, the definition of disparities and how many people they affect. But the fact of the matter is that Black and Brown populations have been overwhelmingly affected by the pandemic. The death rates, the hospitalization rates are so much higher in those populations. And we can talk about that all day long as well. But, one has to assume that a big part of that is the lack of good ongoing care for chronic medical conditions, especially in underserved populations. You know, and now we're seeing those same disparities emerge in vaccine distribution and administration. You know, I'm confident that those will be worked. But a couple of years ago, the AMA had a task force to end health disparities, which culminated in the creation of our Center for Health Equity, which started before the pandemic in an effort to, you know, make sure that the AMA embedded equity in everything that it did, not just in the delivery of care to underserved populations, but chronic care in general, medical education, physician satisfaction, and practice sustainability, which have been our three major strategic arcs. And I think it is clear that we need more emphasis. We need more minority physicians in medical education. We need to have more doctors that look like the population. We need to have more doctors that are serving in these underserved communities. Racial injustice, which has been another layer on top of all of this, the AMA has declared as a public health emergency. And we've got so much work to do, but I am really hopeful that the emphasis that has been placed on this and the light that has been shown on it will help us really focus on the areas where we have really been lacking.
A year later, in mid-March, the total U.S. cases stand at 29 million and more than 525,000 deaths. While the pandemic is not yet behind us, a third vaccine is now available from Johnson & Johnson, and so far, more than 30 million people have been vaccinated. The major medical journals are in a publishing frenzy as more is discovered about this virus and more treatments are being tested. We asked Dr. Bailey to look in her crystal ball as to what our future will look like. Will we return to normal or a new normal?
I don't know what the new normal is going to be, but I do think that mask wearing has been normalized to some extent and hopefully will be always. We've seen what happens when you wear masks to seasonal flu, to RSV, to other types of contagious respiratory diseases. They've just been virtually zero during the pandemic, which is just fascinating. We have an opportunity to relieve administrative burdens, to improve our public health system, to reduce healthcare disparities, to improve our testing system, to improve the availability of PPE. We have so many opportunities to work on to improve the delivery of healthcare in this country when we come out on the other side of this pandemic.
To keep up with all the developments, please visit our COVID-19 Resource Center at tiny.one/COVID resource. Thank you for joining us.